Cyrus is going to finish his Instagram post, and then we're going to get started. If you are lurking outside, please join us for our conversation about mountains of opportunity. If you're trying to scale some hard tech, get to commercialization, if you would like to invest in some hard tech, I see you. Just come sit. We got seats. It's so comfy. I know, it's the curse of a small space. I can literally see you and call you out. Thanks for joining us. Come on in, everybody. And thank you so much for being here. This is a live recording and fascinating conversation. We're going to talk about what we're calling mountains of opportunity, how the urgent need for climate solutions has ignited a surge in innovative climate tech startups, pushing the boundaries of environmental technology and sustainability. What we're going to try to do today is have a bit of an overview of this kind of increase in really innovative climate tech startups, as represented by two of our panelists, and then talk about the challenges, the opportunities, the de-risking, and getting these startups past what we used to call the Valley of Death, but we are rebranding that as the job of our man across from me today. So let me start by having each panelist introduce themselves. I am Molly Wood. I am the founder and CEO of Molly Wood Media. I host a podcast called Everybody in the Pool, where I try to interview brilliant entrepreneurs and investors who are working on this very hard problem. I'm going to start with Cyrus and then come back this way.
Yeah, my name is Cyrus Wadia. I'm the CEO of Activate, and we're in the business of helping scientists move their ideas into the world and become entrepreneurs.
All right, cool. Hi, everyone. My name is Julie. I'm the Chief Science Officer and co-founder of Opera Bioscience. At Opera, we have a sustainable technology to manufacture proteins more efficiently. So proteins are used in your everyday life in ways that you don't think about. If everyone who's wearing jeans right now, proteins were used in the process of making them. And so we have a sustainable way to make these.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Suarez. I'm the CEO and co-founder of TerraWatts. We're working on a method of transmitting electricity through the ground without needing wires. And so our vision is, can we create a subsurface transmission system that's, you know, with less copper, more resilient, and can get to scale faster?
So clearly, right? Exactly. Solving hard problems with hard technology. Cyrus, I want to get a little bit more from you, if I could, about how Activate works and how you're empowering these two Activate fellows on stage.
Yeah, happy to. So Activate's been around for about 8 years, and we run what's known as a fellowship program. It's the Activate Fellowship. And both our other panelists are fellows, and super exciting to see you both here. What we provide is some financial support, research support, and 2 years of programming, which is around helping an entrepreneur figure things out. So in the sea of resources out there, we have a crack team based in these different communities, I'll name them in a second, that help our entrepreneurs, our future entrepreneurs, figure out how to navigate those resources. And they come in with an idea, something that they cooked. Maybe they've been cooking it in the lab for a long time. It's usually in a hard tech space. So think industrial materials or chemistry or material science. And what they've been doing is developing the technology, and now it's time to grow, scale, bring that to market. And that's not a trivial task. So we provide them a lot of the support and scaffolding around going from the lab to becoming an entrepreneur, starting a company, and now taking that into the world.
And then I want to turn to you and ask you to expand a little bit on what that has meant, not necessarily as an ad for Activate, but as, you know, as entrepreneur scientists who are trying to scale technology for commercialization, for businesses, how important is it to have these communities and have that structure in terms of evolving your ideas, your science, and all of that? Julie, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I came out of my PhD program directly into building the company. And I think one of the main things is we're trained academically to solve problems and understand the science of what we're doing, but we don't understand the market of it. And the things that we think is important as scientists isn't always what the market needs or what the customer needs. And Activate has been really helpful in just kind of getting me out of that academic mindset of the work and into more of the market, and thinking about the market and where we can actually apply our technology and actually sell things.
I want to echo everything Julie said and just think about my pathway to Activate, because I think one of the most important things that Activate did for me was, before I even applied to Activate or got in, was teach me I could be an entrepreneur, that a scientist can move from a laboratory to a business setting, and that this plays a critical role in the climate change community. And so this was not something I knew of. I didn't know I was going to be here one day. And so Activate opened that door for me.
I just want to add, you know, sometimes it's not so obvious why this is important. There needs to be patience in both capital, support, investments, time, and money for hard tech to find its way through the gauntlet into the commercialization stack. I think we'll have a chance to talk more about that, but prior to Activate sort of starting this fellowship program, there were very few pathways for scientists with a dream and this kind of core idea to do something with it. And so we're really proud, and we're just at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, let's stay on this idea, because I think, because really this is what we, when we talk about the Valley of Death, maybe now's a good time for definitions. When we talk about the Valley of Death, what we often mean is all kinds of things, right? In the investment community, it can mean the point where you have some product market fit, but you can't grow past that, right? And then you die. In the academic setting, we often mean that there's really promising research that can't be commercialized because it's too risky or it doesn't scale outside the lab. You know, stop me if I'm getting these definitions wrong. The reason we're calling it Mountains of Opportunity, by the way, is a rebrand by the new director of ARPA-E, Dr. Evelyn Wang, who I had the opportunity to interview at New York Climate Week, and she said, we're not calling it Valley of Death anymore. That's kind of a bummer, and we're moving away from doomerism, particularly in the climate conversation. It's an opportunity that involves de-risking. Talk about the academic setting a little bit more. I think that's really powerful about you know, the dream you had to become an entrepreneur. Like, what was it that ignited that fire that made you say, the lab is too small for me?
Yeah, I think perhaps if I had been at this stage 10 years ago, the academic setting would still be really enticing. I understood it. There is funding out there for these kinds of big, bold ideas. But we're at the point now where we have to go faster, and we have to know tomorrow if these ideas can scale or not scale. And it's not so much about making a career out of researching, and it's not, I mean, it's so important, but there is this push now to get this science done quickly, and academics is not moving at that scale. It just can't. It doesn't have the flexibility. And so we find that kind of speed and scale and execution in the entrepreneurial space. And kind of to Julie's point too, as a scientist, you're not thinking about how it translates directly into the market. You're thinking about the science, but to make impact, you have to think about the society that it interacts with.
I agree with Caitlin's point, especially around how, like, in the academic space, we don't move quickly enough. And so for our technology, it actually has been in development in an academic lab for over 15 years. And it has reached the point where we did a lot of that early de-risking in an academic setting. But when you get to the point where, oh, we need to make a product and sell it, that's now marketing. That's a completely different beast from what you're doing in an academic setting. And the kind of challenges are different. And I also think a lot about how when I started, I didn't start in entrepreneurship. I was really interested in the science of what I was doing. I used to work at a company called Amherst Biotech, where we engineered yeast to turn sugar and ferment it into chemical compounds like diesel. And I really wanted to learn how to understand a biological system deeply so we can engineer it. And in my case, I am studying a protein transport system in bacteria. It's called the type 3 secretion system. It's a membrane-bound protein complex, but we've engineered it to pump proteins that we can sell out of the like cell, and that's been really exciting. So for me, the most exciting thing has been really just the scientific research that I'm doing and everything that I get to learn about this protein complex as I'm engineering it. Yeah.
What is the impact that you're going for? We're going to talk about commercialization, but like, come on, this is so cool. So talk to me about the impact and the problems that you're hoping to solve with each of your different fields of research, because it's fascinating.
Yeah. So it turns out we use electricity for a lot of things, and which is wonderful in that there's a lot of opportunity.
We need to use it for a lot more things.
And a lot more things that aren't electrified. So I think you have a big vision, and that's what got me motivated into this sphere, is the world a good enough conductor of electricity that we can use it instead of having to build copper wires? And in my perspective as a geoscientist, you will hit this point where we just don't have enough copper to meet the demand. And especially, like I said, this is a time frame problem more than anything else. We have to go quick. Mining is a slow process, et cetera, et cetera. So I have the big vision. That's what pulls me. That's what's motivating me. And I understand that the technology is not at that scale. And so how do I have the two roads meet, where the technology is scaling, but I'm still making, I have to make a business that makes money to keep the dream alive. And it's really, really hard. It's probably the thing that's kept me the most stagnant, is understanding how these two pieces are going to fit as we go forward. And that's what I'm learning through Activate. They're giving me the time, the space, the resources, and the experts who can help me, you know, create the best path possible.
Yeah. And what's been like exciting for me is, for us, we really want to transform the current processes that are used to manufacture proteins. I think we've worked ourselves into kind of a local maxima with the current systems that we have now, and they're not sustainable. They generate a lot of water waste. And I think a lot about, like, the impact I want to have is to be able to disrupt an industry that's kind of optimized in this local maxima with just a new transformative process. And we're not the only ones. There are other companies that are doing like continuous fermentation processes that reduce water usage and overall energy usage. And so I think a lot about what are current processes that we do now that use a lot of resources that we don't think about because they've been standardized, and how can we change those?
And then Cyrus, in some ways this might seem a little obvious, but pick up on this thread of like, why commercialize, right? As a method of achieving impact.
Well, I'm going to go back to Caitlin's key point, which is we're moving too slow. And so if we're here to talk about climate or any of the other societal needs, we got to move faster. And commercialization is a tricky beast, because I like to say that, you know, we don't have a shortage of imagination or a supply issue with core ideas that are being nurtured. What we have is an idea diffusion problem, where things that are happening over here are expected to hop the fence and be handed off to, you know, folks that'll take them into businesses, commercialize, maybe move over into bigger corporates over time to kind of scale. I'm talking specifically about the private sector. And so you need the right idea. You need also the right people, though, to help bring those ideas forward. And I don't know that we have had as much historically or in the recent past on the types of leaders that can translate quickly. And so if the question is, you know, should we be commercializing these things or not? Not all science necessarily leads to a product. Not all science leads to a company. Point taken. We need science for just the creation of knowledge out there. And I think that's sort of one of the core benefits of how, at least in the US, we fund core basic science. But for the problems to be solved, when we're talking about climate, we have to find ways to more rapidly move some of those best ideas into practice. Because right now, what we're looking at is a big gap, a delta, and I call it the innovation gap, but we have, if we work backwards from the problem, and if you really want to get to a 1.5 degree world, there are places we just don't know how to do it. Like, there are parts of the industrial sectors and the economy that we stand to benefit from more innovation and invention coming out. And that's why we're in this business.
Anything to add to that? Let's sort of take the pieces of commercialization, the pieces of the, I have frozen because I'm trying to think of a good mountain metaphor, like our footholds up the mountain. De-risking is a big one, right? So how do you, as you think about approaching this, with knowing that you've got this kind of like 2-year cushion that is enabling you, how do you think about de-risking in a way that makes these ideas sort of presentable to the investment community once you're done with this fellowship? I'll have everybody. You could just kick around the de-risking thing. You don't have to wait for me to call on you.
Yeah, I can start with that. I think one of the challenges that I have is when you're building a technology, you can kind of think of it in a very linear way, where different steps along the path are riskier than others. And what I try to do a lot in my planning is to move those riskier experiments early on, even if they don't fit in the same linear path that you'd have to do, to address some of those early concerns. And we found a lot of like really interesting information just doing that. And then the other side of the de-risking is trying to pick products that have multiple markets. And so in our original pitch, we wanted to make ingredients for cultivated meat. Cultivated meat is a little bumpy right now, but those same ingredients that can be used in cultivated meat can also be used in cell therapies. And so what's been exciting is we didn't actually have to change anything internally on the technical side. It was more on the marketing side and business plan. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Picking a pathway that lets me take the core science that needs to still be pushed on and continue to expand it is the angle I'm trying to take. So, for example, you could think about using this technology in its current state to power soil sensors for agriculture. So they'll understand how the, you know, humidity and the water levels of their field. But I started to realize that I would get to a point where I'm doing a few watts of power, maybe over a long distance, but that's not being able to ask the question of, can I do a kilowatt? Can I do a megawatt? And my real goal of moving a lot of power through the ground. So if I flip that around to the geothermal industry, I can think, okay, they're using sensors as well. They want to know, is this a hot, you know, hole in the ground that we've drilled? Is this viable? And as they build out the subsurface areas that we can give power and we can get some data to their instruments, they're eventually going to be transmitting electricity, which is the field I want to be a part of. And so if I can hang out in that vertical for as long as possible, I see the pathway to commercializing. But it's taking me like 7 months to get to this point where I can see that. And it's really critical between where I take the technology and the type of capital that I'm bringing in. I think we'll make it to the point of, you know, patient capital and people who are willing to be a part of this journey, understanding where we want to go.
Okay, I want to build on this, but maybe in a way that you're not expecting. So let me give it a shot.
You go crazy, Cyrus.
Yes. So there's a lot that needs to happen to de-risk an idea, technology, demonstrate, you know, that you can actually start to scale, to collect the investments and start raising capital. And Activate fellows tend to do pretty good on this regard. During the fellowship, they raise about $6 million. And if you look at the course of all of our fellows over the last 8 years, collectively $1.9 billion has been raised. It's pretty incredible. But the company to me is the wrapper on the leader. And so I'm going to go there for a second, because I'm going to talk about how do you de-risk leaders and the right people and talent for the future. Because, you know, while these companies may succeed, be wildly successful, both of you are going to have other moments in your career as you move forward. There's going to be another company or something else you decide to do. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially with how we scout talent, and then what we do in the programming of Activate, is thinking about, you know, leadership mindsets that really help us in the commercialization game, in the sense that you will pivot. And even in your current technologies, you might pivot to the right market, but the training is there to move faster and being comfortable with that change and figuring out how to basically make that change possible. And then if I carry that forward into your entire career, you're going to be in positions of, you know, greater influence and authority, and what you're doing today on the ground and the things that you're learning and how you've embraced it, and I hear it in your voices, are going to pay long-term dividends as we think about the leaders for society down the road.
I think that's such a, thank you for going there, because that was going to be my next question. That's such an important point when you deal with the investment community in Silicon Valley. We talked about a pathway out of the valley. it's about funding people. It really is. And it's kind of, it seems counterintuitive in some ways to apply that to brilliant scientists with brilliant ideas. But at the end of the day, it's true, right? You were chosen as fellows because of your leadership potential, which is a really, I think, important thing to point out. Let's, as long as we have started with the investment community, talk a little bit about that. That is kind of, you know, the valley or the mountain, if you will, happens after Activate. And so part of what you're doing is pitching, getting ready to pitch, thinking about funding. What has been your impression so far of the funding environment? Let's talk about patient capital. Let's talk about the mechanisms for funding that exist now and where they're working and where they're not. I'm just looking at you. You're going first.
I mean, the theme is going to be it's slow in that, as I think the bias as a scientist, having worked with grants, my goal is to get non-diluted funding in. And the grant cycle with government funding is amazing, and it's out there, and the opportunity is incredible. It's just slow to get those going. I know that I have a responsibility to take the vision and like take the company where as far as it can go. And so I'm willing to wait on capital that will give me more control so that I have more power over how this company grows. But that being said, being a part of the Activate community, and I think some of the panelists we were just listening to in the philanthropic side, people are starting to think about how to bridge this gap between money that is still making impact, that is keeping businesses alive over the valleys. And I'm so grateful to be a part of the community that I get to know who those people are and interact with them. And as I go forward, I know who to target, as opposed to maybe more traditional VC with looking for just the return in 10 years. And so, yeah, it's tricky. It's a big learning curve on top of everything else.
I liked Caitlin's point about just the control over your company and kind of like the different funding sources and the strings attached to them. For us, we are currently primarily funded on non-dilutive grant funding, and it's a little slower. We're growing a little slower, but we also are able to be more intentional. And I think about how I thought about the company a year ago and what our plan was. If we had gotten, you know, really early investment funding right then and like went with that, that would have been the wrong path. We would have had to pivot right away, but then now we would have been on a more high pressure timeline because we've taken investor funding. So I really liked that point. And so, yeah, we're trying to build it intentionally. The other point I wanted to make, especially for us, we have a sustainable biotech technology in a climate space. And a challenge that I encounter a lot is a lot of climate investors, they think about climate work as decarbonization or energy reduction or how to create more energy. And Olivia, the last panelist in the panel before us, talked about this too, is there needs to be, I guess, more room for climate to start looking at sustainable biotech as well. I think there's a lot of potential even now. There's a company, Amyris, that renewably makes diesel fuel from sugar, right? And we don't talk about the sustainability of biotech enough.
I mean,
do you want me to build on that? No.
I do. No, I totally do. I'm just trying so hard not to like be like, what else is out there? Okay.
Okay, well, first
say
of all,
say more about funding.
Yeah, so we're here at South by Southwest, and how cool is this? Like, we get to see all this great technology, but there's a retraining with the investment community that is in process and that needs to continue, and that is back to the patient capital. Different than software or virtual reality, we're seeing a lot of that here today. If you want to build a thermal battery company or a geothermal company or the things that we're talking about today, it's going to take a while and a heavy investment. And I think that the venture community in general, if we look at it broadly, while they're starting to make more investments in climate, we can do more. But I mean, I guess the question I would ask is, do we believe there is patient capital out there? Truly believe it. I'm skeptical. And this goes back to just how the system is incented. And government has a role to play. The private sector has a role to play. And the investment community has a role in all stages of investment, venture, private equity, growth equity. If we're really going to get after these problems in a meaningful way, right, the two of you can run the gauntlet all day long, and you're going to be successful because you have the grit and the diligence to sort of push through, and you'll find the right investors. And it is a gauntlet. But if we want to make this go faster and better for all entrepreneurs out there, we have to be thinking at the system level in terms of like what needs to change for truly patient capital to be there for hard tech that solves these big problems like climate.
What happens in the absence of patient capital? You mentioned that there do seem to be the emergence of some bridging mechanisms. Certainly there's more government money than there used to be, but so much that they unfortunately can't deploy it very fast, it seems like. Where do we see some of those funding sources starting to come in? The bridge builders, if you will.
I don't want to, this is the plug for Activate, I think.
I really, Activate, yes.
Do you want to plug Activate?
Stipulate. Oh, feel free. No, please.
But yes, I think
their Activate name is on the door, yeah. So Activate, plug away.
Activate is one of the bridge builders, really, you know, connecting us, especially coming from, again, academia, where we don't learn business and what the path looks like. It's nice to have the structure of Activate telling us, like, what's been really great is having this community of fellows that are all building their companies in different ways. Some people did take investor funding right away. Other people went more slower grant, non-dilutive route. But what's been great with being in Activate is seeing all these stories, being able to talk to people about their process and the path that they're taking so that we can do the path that makes sense for our company and what we want with it.
Yeah, I'll echo that. I think my first entry into the idea that entrepreneurship was the right way to go was actually the creation of the NSF TIP Directorate. So it's technology, innovation, and partnerships. And it's probably the first time that the NSF is willing to give money to companies instead of just in academic settings. And they have a new chart that says that we have to think about use-inspired research. So the research is going in a direction that we understand there's a use case for this, for the work.
It's
wild that that's new. And I think you just nailed it. For years, we've been suffering. I'm going to go to the private sector now, which is where I've had the opportunity to live for the last 10 years. I think that there's sort of a general misunderstanding out there in terms of how commercialization happens and what the role of these companies are. But the thing that we're suffering from is sort of a failure in a way of the private sector to continue early stage science and research and development. You hear these stories all the time, the Bell Labs of the past, Xerox PARC, places where earlier stage science and development was happening that had an off-ramp directly into a company that could actually bring that to life. And as those companies retreated from those core activities and continued to, the government has tried to figure out ways to plug in, but sometimes it feels like we're throwing darts at a dartboard where you have, you know, sort of this tech transfer idea over here, commercialization. All of it's good and it's all well intended. But I would say, you know, my call to action back to the private sector would be, hey, we need your help here to come back in a little bit more strongly. And I don't know what that looks like, but we need to, as Activate, one of the things we're thinking about is how do we create faster off-ramps of our fellows directly into companies that are well-positioned to help grow and scale these. Because again, we're all racing against the clock and we got to be thinking about that.
Let's put a little bit of a finer point on the extent to which it's a bridge. Activate does not take equity. We should probably specify no ownership in the company. It is non-dilutive funding. And sprung out of academia, right? I mean, there's still, certainly when you look at thriving technology centers, they're usually situated where there is a great R&D university. So the path from academia to commercialization exists. It's been weakened in the United States, as we've been talking about. Activate sort of built on that idea, right? Because it sprung out of a university lab. So give us some of that history and talk about how, like, you've seen academia changing, if at all, in the direction, like you said, now at least there is a sense of outcomes to research.
I've definitely seen it in the biotech side. There are a lot of incubator programs set up. Incubators programs are basically generally shared lab space within a university. The capital equipment cost to set up a biotech lab is quite expensive. Could be into the millions to just get standard equipment that you need to use for your experiments. In the incubator space, we have shared space. So I'll talk specifically about Northwestern, where my company is out of. Northwestern, in the past 2 years, just started the Query Incubation Lab to better assist academics coming out of university trying to build companies. They're connecting us with investors. They're also providing some startup funds, and it's all managed through the tech transfer office, and they get to see a lot of this because they see the patents that are coming out of the university, and they're trying to build a better pipeline to actually support those patents actually getting commercialized. And I see this in other universities as well. Berkeley, MIT, Harvard, yeah.
Do you want to add? Well, let me just say something real quick. I might be popping up too high here, but yeah, so bring me back down to earth. So we're able to support 40 to 50 new science entrepreneurs every year. That's great. But I think what we're really in the business of is thinking about Activate. I know we're talking a lot about Activate, but let's talk more about just entrepreneurship as a pathway for PhD students, postdocs, faculty that are in this space. This is important. Because I don't know where the next dream that could change the world is going to come from. It hurts a little bit that I can only do 40, 50 of these a year. I want to grow that, and we will. But, you know, there are 40,000 graduating scientists a year in this country. To give them that pathway, or at least for them to know that that's a supported pathway, is what really matters here. And so we collectively, like, okay, we've got one program that we're proving works, and it's a model, but... You know, I'm very interested in seeing, you know, more of this broadly and making sure that this is now a known and established pathway, and we shouldn't really stop until that's true.
Yeah, I totally agree. The more ski lifts up the mountain, the better off we're all going to be. Activate certainly one, gets you a certain way. We need to go further. I think I'll add something that's really powerful about the entrepreneurial space instead of the academic setting. I'm a geoscientist. I've been talking to you all about wireless power transmission. So this is not where I did my PhD, which I know is not always the case. A lot of Activate fellows did their PhD in what they're commercializing. I still have the crossover between geoscience, thinking about the earth, and power. And I'm stretching, which is something also Dr. Wang spoke about at RPE. I'm stretching into something, and I'm incorporating a few different disciplines to think about the problem. And I would not have been able to do that in an academic setting. I would have had to have been an electrical engineer to continue to work in that space. As an entrepreneur and as a CEO, I'm actually extremely well suited to be thinking about the whole picture and then bringing in the minds and putting myself to the side and saying, my job is to build the perfect environment for this idea to grow. And it's not about me coming to the table and making the perfect item. And so I think scientists need to realize that that's a role they can play in this and that there is a space for you to do it. But you wouldn't really know that unless you talk to people who are Activate Fellows. I mean, applying to the program, I didn't think I was going to get in because I knew I didn't do my PhD in this work. And I thought there's no way they're going to let me be a part of this. Like, I didn't think it was possible. So...
Isn't that amazing?
That's outrageous.
You know, it seems so obvious when we're sitting here talking about it, but that's what I mean.
That's the rigidity of the thinking. Exactly. If you have, this is how that path works. This is how the commercialization path works. This is how corporates adopt technology. Right. And it's breaking down. It's a skills transfer as much, a skills and mindset transfer as much as a tech transfer. Let's keep talking about different sources of funding. So venture... Well, what are we thinking about venture right now? Like venture capital keeps dipping a toe in climate tech and then freaking out. We're in a freak out cycle.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll start. You are both on the front line, so I don't have the same experience as you do, but what I've been assured of is last year was in climate tech investments, it was a bit of a correction. So maybe venture felt like it got over its skis a little bit. It's course correcting back, but it's still holding the course. And there may be a spillover that into this year. We'll see. I mean, only time will tell. But I think it goes back to the incentive structures that everybody trying to do something in this space, whether you're an entrepreneur, a scientist, a business leader, in a venture capital firm, everybody in this space is fighting against the way the system has been running for years. And so that's going to take time. That's a long game. But this goes back to the leadership point. So that's been my understanding of the venture space. But you both are really close on the ground on this. So tell me what you're experiencing.
Yeah, I think we probably have different experiences being in different industries. So similar to what I was saying earlier, we get the most interest from actually biotech investors. And we don't get as much from climate tech investors. But I will say a lot of it is a numbers game. You just have to meet a lot of people, because when we found the niche climate investor that maybe already funds biotech as well, they're interested in us, or the niche climate tech investor that is thinking more broadly about the future of climate tech, they've also been interested in our biotech, like sustainable biotech technology. So that's been my experience. But it's a lot of, there's a lot of rejection and just working through it.
Some of the data that's coming out from work, CTCV, or is it, I can't remember the acronym off the top of my head.
CTVC.
Thank
Climate
you.
Climate Tech Venture Capital, yeah.
Yeah.
Great newsletter if you don't already get it.
Definitely worth checking out. But so looking down the road, it seems that the early stage investments are still kind of robust enough. So you might get that pre-seed, seed round in the door, and it's actually further down that road that things start to break down in this new environment that we're in. I haven't raised because I have like panic over that, and knowing I need to have things in place. Like taking venture is getting on the escalator, and maybe the world needs to change, and that taking venture isn't an escalator, and so it's not so scary, and I can get on, and we can move a little quicker. But I'm not willing to get on an escalator that goes off a cliff.
But I think another point that's coming out is venture is still the predominant understood pathway for entrepreneurs. And maybe that's part of the issue that, sometimes we may be round peg, square hole situation with venture. It's not all lined up for like the appropriate venture investment. So we have to, back to your point, Molly, I feel like we should be asking this question a lot more in terms of what other areas of capital are available to support, these hard tech ideas continuing to mature, de-risk, and find its way into the world.
This is where I should probably say, which I did not say in the beginning, that I recently pivoted from pure journalism to an investment side of the house as first a managing director and now a venture partner. And certainly that question remains as hot as ever. The question of timelines, the question of return profiles, the question of risk fundamentally is what drives venture. And it's not that they're not always, that they're not willing to get in the pool, but they want to make their money back fast. And that is distorting occasionally for entrepreneurs, just as a level set. So continuing though on talking about different types of funding, I feel like one area that has been interesting, especially given kind of corporate risk profiles, is corporate venture capital. You're starting to see big companies from Wells Fargo to Toyota Ventures, all kinds of Yamaha has a really kind of robust hard tech investment arm. What do we think about that as both a pathway to funding and a pathway to adoption?
Yeah, I'm actually very excited about corporate venture. And there are a couple companies that we are talking to now with that in mind as the future plan. I think one thing is that it is a slightly slower path, and not just that, but you're also now kind of in control of the timeline of the larger company, which is just something that we're trying to be mindful of as we're engaging in this. Is I think the infrastructure and support and the understanding of the industry that a corporate sponsor can give you is so much greater than what I'm learning just trying to figure it out myself, but also knowing that we might need to move a little faster than their timeline is to survive as a company.
It's definitely something I'm interested in. I would say I know the least about, maybe just because the number of people I've spoken to has been mostly more climate or traditional VC than the corporate side. But I am speaking with National Grid as an example. And one thing they know, and a few others actually, is that they take technology when they see it's ready to be scaled. So I see them as the like glimmer of hope in the mirage getting to the end of that road.
Yeah, I like the glimmer of hope because I firmly believe that we need more of this. The one additional challenge, there's a time horizon challenge, there's a scale, ready for scale challenge, but then there's, you got to fit the need of the corporate as well to be even looked at. And the corporations, while they're making really good progress, I'd say collectively, at trying to figure out what that roadmap to net zero carbon or zero carbon is, there's still a lot that they need to do to figure out, well, what are the hard problems that I can't solve myself that I need to go scout and use my venture arm to go scout for me? It's still early days of that, but I'm hopeful that in the coming years that more corporates are going to have their own theory of, here are the hard problems I need to go scout for. We're going to deploy our venture dollars to technology and startups that are doing this.
I would love if you can expand on that a little bit, having come from a corporate background, like you said, into Activate, and having that inside view of how companies prioritize sustainability, but also how they adopt and procure and get out of doing things the way, you know, as we think about scaling the mountain, it's getting the funding to get to a product, but then it's also getting somebody to buy the product. And corporates have their own set of risk-averse behaviors that can be another barrier. I'm not trying to be a downer. We're just trying to knock down every problem here.
Well, no,
in one hour.
You and I had a chance to talk about this before. You know, I still firmly believe we can do this through a more sort of traditional capitalist sort of structure, and we can align sustainability goals with core business objectives and shareholder value. But where it breaks down, and maybe this goes back to sort of my vision for leaders of the future, will be not just optimizing for shareholder value, but for societal value, and doing what it takes to change the incentives that guide their own behaviors. Now, what I'm asking of our future leaders is very hard, but it's important and it matters. Because until that day comes, there is a fundamental time horizon mismatch in the decisions that have to be made every day. I'm going to be making a decision that sort of has a payoff in 5 to 10 years versus what I need in the next quarter. And the way companies are governed, this becomes extremely difficult for any executive. So I go back into this idea that we have to be thinking a little differently about both kind of the leaders who are guiding us, but also the incentives that guide them. And until that happens, I mean, the reality on the ground is day to day, it's a slog inside these corporates. And then what that means is, while they may love to sort of find 100 ideas that are important to them and figure out a way to onboard and de-risk and scale, they may only have the ability to metabolize one or two, and that's not nearly enough. And they know that, and we know that. And so, you know, that deserves more attention.
As you go through this program, how do you think about tackling that? Like, I, you know, from my investor seat, I can tell you that I always was like, if it doesn't fit into some existing workflow, it's going to be tough to adopt. Like, how do you think about the adoption challenge while you're also thinking about de-risking totally novel technology? No big deal.
Oh my God. the weight of
it. Caitlin's like, I would like to go now. I don't want to commercialize.
I'm just like, stop. Because how do I have a metric for what is it? Who's going to tell me no, I can't put power through the ground? And how do you mitigate safety? I mean, there's so many questions. I don't have all the answers yet.
Step one is just knowing that you got to get them.
I got to get them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think kind of back to the idea of money and what are we providing and what do people need? And so getting money in the door so I could hire people to have these questions figured out, and utilizing communities like Activate so I can get on a Slack and say, does anyone know professionals in the regulatory space at the, you know, and there's answers. And like that, that's so important. Like the more of that there is, like everyone who can do that, like it's massive. Getting information quickly and having personnel willing to be there. Activate is like beyond the money. That's is so critical.
Yeah, the adoption question is like a challenging one for us too, especially because we have this, what is like a transformative process. For us, a lot of it is, you know, being able to meet all these people and talk about what the industry actually looks like and how do people fit in and where they start developing processes so we can target there first rather than where we think people would be in the scale-up stage. If we actually try and talk to someone at scale-up, that's actually too late. We should be talking to them while they're designing their protein. Yeah. So just like really understanding that kind of pathway and chain.
You know, as I'm sort of sitting here thinking about the question and sort of how we're thinking about the situation, part of what I was thinking about just even yesterday, artists, athletes, they have agents. They have people who are there to support them as individuals, not just kind of land that big contract or that movie deal, but to stay true to their values and move them forward. In much the same way, our managing directors at Activate are they're talent agents. You know, we scout you, but we're your talent agent. And so in a way, I think we collectively, we do a lot to talk about ideas, like this amazing idea over here, like even ones we heard. And so, you know, we collectively, I think we can go a long way, even just providing a little bit more support to people to achieve their dreams, achieve success, fight these like embedded systems and incentives. And that's not just for science entrepreneurs, because your job is extremely hard. Like what you just heard, being an entrepreneur is incredibly difficult. And being a science entrepreneur in a space that, you know, it could take 5 to 10 more years to mature to a point of, you know, investment. You know, your job is extremely, I mean, I'm so impressed that you do what you do every day. And I'm so happy that we can be, in a way, at your side supporting you, because I want to see more of that, not just for you, but for the collective out there.
That's a great point. I'm just going to put in a shout out for Andres, who's in the front, who's my managing director. And I agree, like, he's been like a great coach. And even just connecting me to the right people to talk to, he like thinks about that all the time. And I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah. And Andrew Chang's not here, but I'll thank him as well. I know this is being recorded. I also just want to put a plug too that something that I think is important that Activate looks for in fellows is, I remember Andrew asking me, you know, if you didn't get this fellowship, would you be continue to do this? And I said, and absolutely. And before Activate, before I realized I can be in this role, I was writing screenplays. I was writing movies. And I thought, if I can't get this out myself, like if I can get the vision out, like movies seemed like a more tangible outcome for me than doing this role, because I didn't know I could be in this space. I really would truly do this no matter what. I think the really cool, interesting thing that I'm noticing in the ecosystem is we could take 40 to 50 people per year, but there's so many more people who are out there successful getting these government grants. And then I go to talk to them because I want to learn from them. And they say, oh, you're an Activate fellow. I applied to that fellowship. I wish so much I could have gotten in. It would have been so helpful. But they're still out there pursuing it because there's so many scientists who see this problem and so clearly see a solution and are just pushing no matter the obstacles to get through. And it's that's the energy that's there right now. And having as an Activate fellow, you get the agent, and it's very lucky to be a part of it.
Yeah, I don't want to gloss over this idea of community. I really, like, we've been talking about commercialization and funding and cold hard cap. By the way, like, talk about optimizing for people. If Caitlin weren't figuring out how to transmit electricity through the ground, she would just write movies. Sometimes I like to say that God doesn't give with both hands, but sometimes God does. But I don't want to let go of this idea of community, because it convening is so important. Sharing information is so important. And we tend to gloss over it, particularly when you're pursuing something that is designed to make money. You get secretive and you have to protect your intellectual property and you have to kill the other guy. And what I hear over and over from Activate Fellows is the value is in having, and you can see it. I mean, people almost tear up when they talk about it. How do we make that bigger and can sort of continue to drive home that that fundamentally the value here is in being able to have like a mom's group to help you keep your newborn alive?
I mean, we live in a world, I think something that hits home for me, I mean, I got my electrical engineering degree from YouTube University, right? There is knowledge. Yeah, there's like, how do you do these things? Somebody talked about it on YouTube. We have Slack, right? Slack is just, anybody can go in a Slack and look at a community group. And so we have the tools to do really amazing, beautiful things. And how do we just organize and do it? That's the thing.
I'll just say one thing here, and that is, actually, there may be two things I'm about to say. So the first is, we fundamentally believe that community is our differentiator, and it is the thing that we have invested so much in because we believe that's how we scale, our fellows and how these ideas actually, and we're proving that's true. The glue that holds this community together is fundamentally probably two things: trust. And trust born out of the right fellows. So when we're out there looking, it's a pretty rigorous process because we're looking for mindsets, not just skill sets and great ideas. And what has really kind of hit home for me recently as we're going through our selection right now is these are big dreamers, all of our fellows. And big dreamers become big leaders in their career. But it's really hard to ignore a dream. You know, if I had the ability to support one more dream, why wouldn't I? Especially if it's a dream that actually could help society in a much bigger way down the road. And so I think the thing that keeps our community coming back time and time again and supporting us and our fellows and providing time that's like, it's amazing, the glue that we have. It's trust that we've established, but also that we're dreamers, but we're putting a lot of pace behind these dreams and we're starting to see that.
So we just have a couple minutes left, which feels like a good time to talk about success stories that have come out of Activate. I mean, there are companies who are sort of showing that this is a path that's possible. 12, Sublime, Fervo, it at Brimstone. It sort of feels like actually when you look around the climate tech landscape, a lot of times you're like, oh, all of them were. So let me go sort of down the panel and end with Cyrus. Who do you look up to from those kind of previous classes and think of as a path to follow in?
I would say Activate also has, I don't know if we touched on the fellows first mentality, and that's part of they don't take equity in the company. So it's really about you as a leader being successful, even if the company is not. So I look to the companies and it's the stories that I see either on LinkedIn or on their website when they're speaking about their journey and their path and how they got to where they are that, you know, sort of like business agnostic. I am just so moved by what they're doing. And there's some notes of things that I'm like, oh, that kind of sounds like how I feel about things. That drives me to think I'm in the right space. I'm going in the right direction and that I do belong in this role.
Yeah. I look to a lot of kind of newer biotech companies, ones like Amyris.
Do you want us to come back? We can come back.
Sorry, I have a call.
Okay.
Two. All right, so.
It's a very scientific process I call trying to breathe water is what happens. It never works. Cyrus, talk about some of your winners. Yeah.
So, I'll be brief, and I spent a lot of time talking about, ones you've mentioned, Brimstone, 12, Antora, Fervo. Get to know these companies. Several of them were just named on, another one of these big green tech, climate tech lists from Time Magazine. I feel like what inspires me equally is seeing what's coming through the pipeline, meaning I just sat in on some really exciting ideas around solar, nanolithography, nuclear fusion. You know, these are the ideas that are coming through our pipeline that we get to see every year. So while we like to talk, and we just did a little bit about the ones that have been out of the gate and they inspire us too, I'm equally inspired by what I see coming behind. And that's why I'm super excited by this overall vision and how do we grow this pie even bigger.
Thank you. All right. So I'd say I looked at Amyris as a big example, as a company that's fermented in large scale, very heavily engineered microbes. And I also look at other companies like Lygos. They took a slower path, more intentional path, but they're also doing fermentation of heavily engineered microbes. And I really appreciate seeing the challenges that these companies have faced and learning from them. And so that's what's exciting for me. So I look to a lot of biotech companies and startups.
Well, we've talked a lot about mechanisms, strategies, different types of funding, but it sounds like, Cyrus, at the end of the day, if you had to sum it up, you would say it's people.
100%, it's people.
Thank you so much to our panelists, Cyrus, Julie, Caitlin. Really, really appreciate the time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Come back at 2:30 when we will actually be doing a deep dive into the venture capital model as it relates to climate tech, and we'll see you then.